Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Democrat Jim Wall, Republican Chris Roebling, author Carol Felsenthal, and historian R. Craig Sauter. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base on State Street, that great street in Chicago, where our phone lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. And we begin the program by, obviously, we're on the eve of the Democratic Convention opening tomorrow night in Denver. And we're going to be talking about the Democrats, as well as whether or not Joe Biden's ascendancy to the vice presidential nomination is likely to come up with or lead John McCain to come up with a surprise pick of his own later in this week. Senator McCain is expected to make his announcement for vice president on Friday of this week in Dayton, Ohio. But first, let's begin with the big news story of the day, and that is that Joe Biden is going to be the running mate of Barack Obama. The announcement was made yesterday, the first joint appearance on the old state capitol in Springfield, Illinois. Jim Wall, you have been to virtually every convention since 1972. You're a key cog in the Democratic political wheel. You know Joe Biden. Joe Biden is a friend of yours, and you're no John Kennedy. But tell us about your impression of the pick.
Actually, he's a friend of David Wilhelm's, and I know David Wilhelm quite well.
Well, that's pretty close.
I'm very excited about Joe. He was the one I wanted to see named.
Why?
I just think he brings everything that complements the candidate, Barack Obama. He brings foreign policy experience of significance. He brings many years in the U.S. Senate. He is something of a maverick and is not playing the Washington game. I think that's a good case to make. It may be hard to make at first, but it's something you can make. And he's got a real tough attitude on the campaign trail.
Chris Roebling is our card-carrying Republican this evening. Your reaction to Joe Biden?
I think that Joe Biden is a pretty conventional choice, and so I think it says some things about Barack Obama. Number one, he's a conventional politician. And number two, I think it says that he has recognized his own, say, insufficiency of background or experience relative to foreign affairs. And so I think he has found somebody who, as my friend Jim says, is a very solid politician in his own right. There are elements, I think, of Joe Biden's background that give him a lot of color and character and excitement. But he has a lot of foreign policy knowledge, and he is a very solid choice for Barack Obama.
In your view, though, you talked about a perceived weakness. Isn't one of the great strengths of any leader is to know their limitations and to make adjustments so that your limitations are improved?
Absolutely. There's no question about it. And there is a lot to be there is a lot that has been written about that and has been said about that, especially in White House memoirs, both at the presidential and staff level. So I think it was a good first decision. I think he had other good first decisions, but this is certainly one of several good decisions he could have made.
Craig Sauter joins us. Craig, nice to have you with us.
PoliticalConventions.com
is your website. We're going to be talking about presidential conventions and talking about Denver and the historical nature of it. But first of all, your reaction to Joe Biden, who will accept the nomination next Wednesday night.
I was happy to see that Biden was chosen. I think he was the most experienced of the field. He brings a lot of that expertise on foreign policy. I think it may be something if it's a close election and they lose by one state like Indiana, they may regret it. But I think the American people be reassured. It's mostly the people who know politics, who know who Joe Biden is. The average person on the street, if we walked out on State Street, probably never heard of him until yesterday.
It's a popular Inside the Beltway pick. Your reaction, Carol Felsenthal, author of the book Clinton in Exile.
He might help in Pennsylvania. Biden might bring Pennsylvania to the Obama ticket. I think that, first of all, he wasn't, in my opinion, not a surprise choice at all. All of the Washington pundits were saying it was going to be Joe Biden. I mean, Andrea Mitchell went out on a limb. Howard Feynman of Newsweek went out on a limb. I was pretty sure it was going to be him. Biden, years ago, a couple of years ago, I was writing a profile of Bill Daley, Chicago, the mayor's brother, Commerce Secretary, very close friends. In 1987, Biden asked Bill Daley to run his campaign for president. When I was profiling Bill Daley, I had remembered a lot of what happened causing Biden to have to drop out of the race, the 1988 presidential race.
Plagiarism charges.
But I went back and I looked at it and I thought, oh no, this is going to come back. I mean, it's more than plagiarism. It's cheating. It's sure. misstating his law school record. He plagiarized. He lifted five pages from a Fordham University law reviewed article when he was in law school. He got an F in the class. He had to retake it. It's his hot temper, his tendency to say some truly wacky and sometimes negative things to respond to people in a negative way. There's one that was captured on C-SPAN tape in which he was, when he was running for president in 87, he met up with a man named Frank at a campaign stop, and Frank said to him, "Where did you go to law school and how did you do?" It was an innocent, neutral question. And Biden said, "Listen, Frank, I bet you my IQ is much higher than yours," and then proceeded within the course of the next couple of minutes to tell about four different lies about his record. So I think
he,
in a way...
Is there tape of that? Is there tape of this?
Oh, sure.
I think that's all on
C-SPAN.
Tape.
Okay. Yeah, well, I expect to see it.
So we'll be hearing it.
It's at the RNC right now.
Right.
So what you're saying is, just because you're this, what we have on this program, this is why we have this program Beyond the Beltway, because you don't go to the regular Washington parties.
Never.
Like the,
no,
you don't drink
me
from the Kool-Aid. So the question is, what you're saying on Beyond the Beltway this evening is there's a lot of ticking time bombs, some of them on tape that could change the image, at least that's being perpetuated about Joe Biden.
I got to throw one in because it arises directly from the 1987 experience. When he was scouring Chicago for support in that campaign and other campaigns, he ended up meeting a very gregarious, intelligent, capable guy named Joe Kerry. Joe Kerry became a big fundraiser for the Clintons and then was recruited by Joe Biden to become his national finance chief. Joe Kerry is now a convicted felon. And so we have, and I'm not saying that relates in any way directly to what he did with Biden. It's another associational issue.
Jim Wall, your reaction to that?
I was just wondering.
Got to come in a little bit closer. No one's going to hear you.
If you have your talking points from the Camp McCain.
No, I don't.
What about Jim?
I don't
so
have.
Familiar.
No, wait
a minute.
They don't
wait
know
minute.
Why. I'm
she
not
just
talking
she
like
just
Carol
broke
Felsen's
this out
all
right now. This, yeah. I don't think there's talking points here.
I
want to give you a chance to respond, but we are going to break. Just a minute, Jim. 1-800-723-8289. I'm Bruce Dumont. Let's get your reaction to the selection of Joe Biden, and if you are a Republican, does that, in your view, does that trigger an automatic person that you would like to see as John McCain's running mate? Does one lead to an obvious choice for John McCain? Your opinions, 1-800-723-8289. I'm Bruce Dumont.
You've heard the horror stories about meth. It's a powerful, dangerous, and highly addictive drug that's having a serious impact on our communities and horrible effects on families across the country. But there is reason for hope. Treatment for meth addiction is available, and it works. All it takes is someone to care. If you know someone using meth, get involved and help them get on the path to recovery. For more information, visit methresources.gov or call 800-662-HELP. Sponsored by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
It's time to stop what you're doing and go red for women.
Go red.
Start loving your heart today. Visit goredforwomen.org.
Go red.
And take the Go Red Heart Checkup. Get to know your own heart.
Go Red.
The American Heart Association invites you to help stop heart disease.
Go Red!
To Go Red for Women and give your heart the love it deserves.
From Sacramento, California to Scranton, Pennsylvania, home of Joe Biden, or at least one of the homes.
Birthplace
of Joe Biden. Although everyone seems to be saying that because obviously Delaware is in the media market, Philadelphia media market, and because of Joe Biden's growing up or being born in Scranton, suddenly, he has real strong roots, referred to as the third senator from Pennsylvania. Do you think politically that just because of that he grew up there, you know, over 60 years ago, that gives him credibility in Scranton, Pennsylvania,
and
he's the voice of the blue collar worker?
The two states are pretty well close together, and he spent the first early years of his life living there, and then he moved later on to Delaware. I just think Joe Biden will be a very good candidate in Pennsylvania, a lot better with the beer-drinking labor union guys that Hillary was so famously attached to. I've said to several people, if you had a one-on-one with Hillary and Joe in Philadelphia or Pennsylvania, Joe would have whomped her by 20 points. So he has that kind of an appeal. To go back to the scurrilous comments that have been made about my candidate, Joe Biden, Neil Kinnock was the British labor leader who was the politician whose story of his childhood and his young days was used by Biden in his campaign in 1987. He used it many times to see a parallel between his own experience, and he always quoted from Neil Kinnock. He always carefully did that. Once, he did not.
No, wrong. More than once. And not only that, but on the way to give that speech, he said, I was thinking on the way over here tonight, and then he lifted the words. I think he was quite aware of what he was doing.
Well, but here, in a campaign for president and vice president, certainly everything in one's background is going to be fodder. But a question that I would ask, of those 10% of the American people who are going to decide whether or not, you know, who the next president is, because that's where the real rubber meets the road in the presidential campaign. I mean, how effective is a plagiarism story and a story like that? How much weight is that going to get? Frankly, in juxtaposition to the story, let me finish, to the story that is also part of his permanent record, and that is this tragic story of a young aspiring politician, 29 years old, his wife and young daughter die in a tragic accident. He raises those children.
His two sons survive the accident.
I mean, going home, if he doesn't go home to Wilmington every night, he spends a lot of time going back home. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is to the average American, I would say, a very compelling story. It isn't the compelling story of John McCain's, but it may be a more understandable story, because more people probably have had a loved one killed in an automobile crash and had to respond to that than maybe spent 5 years in a POW camp.
Well, I guess I think that the significance of any vice presidential candidate, unless they're really way out of the norm, is pretty low. I think the Biden choice is much more significant for what it says about Barack. I think what it says about Barack is he can. It is further evidence that he has had phony pretexts for his campaign. My central theory, my central organizing principle about Barack is he is a genuine phony. And he has been a phony from the beginning. He said, I am all about change. I'm all about new politics. I'm all about a new page. We're going to turn the chapter, et cetera, et cetera. Joe Biden, A, is a conventional choice. And Joe Biden, B, is a conventional partisan down in the mud. I'm going to throw it at you. You're going to throw some back at me. We're going to go 15 rounds. Then we'll have a shot and a beer at Dubliner before I get on the train at Union Station to go on Amtrak back to
fourth in seniority in the U.S. Senate.
This is what Joe Biden has done for his 30-plus year career.
Craig, I want to get your response to that.
I was just going to say that the automobile story didn't give him too much help in Iowa when he was running, and he could go to the caucuses and tell people face-to-face that story. And also I wanted to point out that Benjamin Harrison's wife died 2 weeks before a presidential election. It didn't help him. And Horace Greeley's wife died 1 week before a presidential election. It didn't help him. So
Joe Biden,
I'm not sure how
good history.
The American people
Joe
are.
Biden is greatly loved by the firefighting personnel, the EMT, the paramedics of his area, because he developed a relationship and a supportiveness to the firefighting business, if you will, profession, because of the relationship that he established when his sons were so badly injured in this automobile accident. He tells a story in one of his speeches that he would, the firefighting personnel would come for the first 6 years, at least, of his young boys' early days, to his house with a ladder, one of them dressed as a Santa Claus. And he developed this fondness for, and he really is supported, believe me, by the Firefighters Union nationwide.
I want to get a response from you, and then I'm going to ask another question.
Okay.
Carol.
I think that Joe Biden, as a father, and I'm a mother of three, I think he's a fantastic, wonderful father. That one of those sons who was injured in the auto accident is the Attorney General of Delaware. And in September, as a member of the National Guard, he ships out to Iraq, which is something that is not widely known. The tragedy of Joe Biden's life just after he's elected to the Senate is one that I think is known. I mean, I never know how much I know as a political junkie as opposed to what the average person knows. It's an amazing story.
As a political junkie, and I agree with what Craig said, the political junkies know the story of Joe Biden.
Right.
The people that are going to decide this election are the 10% of the people who don't know that story.
Right.
And the telling of that story, I think creates an empathy for this guy,
and that's
which
why
may
Barack
be a little more. It is not on the par with John McCain's personal story, but I think it is.
And you know, that's why Barack Obama said it in his speech yesterday in introducing Joe Biden. But you know, John Edwards had another very compelling story about the death of his 16-year-old son Wade, and. No, I don't know. Somebody could do a very interesting study and paper about these things, because so many people who rise to the top in politics have tragedy. And Al Gore's turned out well. But you know, I don't know. I don't know whether this is, and I don't know whether these character issues and the plagiarism and the cheating and the exaggerating and all those things, I don't know whether they'll make a difference, but I do think they speak to character.
Here's a question. One of the strengths, the prime strength of Joe Biden, allegedly, is experience. He's the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, used to be the head of the judiciary. But foreign policy, he jumped on the plane, went to Georgia. I mean, this is a guy that knows the leaders, you know, told Milosevic he was a war criminal. Okay, so experience, that's Joe. That's, we're supposed to measure him on his experience. This is a guy who voted against the Gulf War and for the Iraq War.
Exactly. Exactly.
Now, which part of that experience do you applaud, Jim Wall?
Voting against the Gulf War, of course. And being for the Iraq War was what was being, I think there was another senator who ran in this pay, named Hillary Clinton, who did the same thing. Most senators did. I must go back to...
Being against the Gulf War, there weren't many senators that were
against
the Gulf War. Well, I know you were, but I'm talking about United States senators.
The Democrats were against the Gulf War. Sam Nunn was against it.
A lot of people
were against the Gulf War.
It was a bad mistake to start with. It was purely...
The Gulf War was, or the vote against?
Sincerely held belief.
It is my sincerely held belief, and I can't let the phony charge against my Democratic candidate go unchecked. I think that's an exaggeration. Do you really want to stand with that phrase?
Oh, I think it.
You live with that.
I think, Jim, it is a. I'm happy to get another theory if you've got one. But Barack is a very engaged, very articulate, attractive. Some might say clean. That's a quote of Joe Biden. But I mean, he's a very neat guy, et cetera, et cetera. And he's the nicest guy you ever want to meet. So I'm not saying he's a bad person. I'm just saying politically, his campaign has been based on two fundamental falsehoods. One, I am different. Two, I am better. And neither of those, which were a lot clearer or more frequently stated back in the...
choosing Joe Biden, he shows a strength of character on his own, willing to get ready for the kind of criticism.
I have acknowledged that.
What if he had picked Governor Kaine of Virginia?
Jim,
you would have said the exact opposite thing.
Jim,
he didn't have the courage to name somebody with experience.
Jim, you talk about the courage that he picked somebody with the strength of a Biden. And by the way, longtime listeners and watchers of this show know, because I've said it many times, I like Joe Biden. I really like Joe Biden. Okay? So I've said it. But having said that, let me put this in context. You have just said that picking Joe Biden speaks to Obama's strength. I would say maybe it speaks to his weakness, because normally if someone gets almost 50% of the vote, why wasn't Hillary selected? Why wasn't Hillary even asked? She got 18 million votes. Joe Biden finished fifth in Iowa and was gone with the wind. I mean, politically speaking, doesn't this demonstrate, frankly, his lack of confidence in himself, that he didn't reach out to the one Democrat out there that would have probably absolutely positively pushed him over the top? That's weakness, not strength.
I don't know why you seem to think she would have pushed him over the top. She did not win the nomination. She
came awfully close. She won all those primaries.
Go ahead. I want to hear this defense here.
She did not win the nomination.
Right.
She lacks the experience that Joe Biden has in the Senate. She does not have Senate Foreign Relations Committee chair experience or judiciary chair experience that Joe Biden has. I just think the exotic idea of her being named vice president only comes from the notion of people who wanted her to be president.
All right, 1-800-72, that was not me, 1-800-723-8029. I want to get everybody's reaction, including those waiting on the line. 1-800-723-8029. By turning her back or turning his back on Hillary Clinton, if you're a Hillary Clinton supporter, your reaction. I'm Bruce Dumont. When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415 for a one-time professional fee American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415. From Austin, Texas to Youngstown, Ohio, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. Our Democrat tonight is Jim Wall. He's the senior contributing editor of Christian Century Magazine. He has been to six Democratic conventions. He has been the floor whip for many of them, a close friend of Jimmy Carter, former president of the United States. And also, you were very involved in Al Gore's campaign and Howard Dean's campaign.
And Bill Clinton's
You've
campaign.
Won some and you've lost some. And this is the first convention you're not going to go to in
That's
a long right. time.
That's exactly correct.
You're going to stay home and watch it on
television.
Watch it on TV. Chris Roebling also joins us. Chris Roebling is a public affairs consultant working for Jane M. Thompson Associates, former executive director of the Republican Party in the Cook County area. And also joining us this evening is R. Craig Sauter. And R. Craig Sauter is a historian of political conventions. And he's not selling anything right now. He's telling you that you can go to his website, which is Political Conventions.
www.presidentialconventions.com.
Presidentialconventions.com. And before we go off the air tonight, we're going to talk about Denver. And because this is not the first time that the Democrats have gathered in Denver, we're going to talk about it in just a moment. Carol Felsenthal also joins us. She is one of the leading freelance writers in the United States, and she is author of a new book called Clinton in Exile, A President Out of the White House. And one of the big questions before we take calls is going to be the way in which the Clintons conduct themselves. Because the success of Barack Obama in the fall, I think, is going to be determined by the Clintons next week in Denver. Do you agree with that? And do you expect them to play fair and above board and rah, 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 we're for Barack Obama? Or do you expect a little skullduggery?
No, well, though, there's always skullduggery. That's the Clintons' middle name. So there will be that. But I think on the surface, they will be rah, rah, rah. They're three speakers at Barack Obama's convention whose last name is Clinton, and that's Chelsea introducing her mother, Hillary, and then Bill Clinton. So on two nights of the convention, you're going to have a big dose of the Clintons. I don't understand why. I think Barack Obama must genuinely dislike, maybe even detest, the Clintons. And it doesn't make sense that Barack Obama did not call Hillary to warn her that she was not the VP pick, even though it was obvious to her because she was asked for no paper, no vetting material. One of his associates in the campaign called, and then he called later that night. I blog for the Huffington Post, and I hear from scores of women, except, well, not all. There's a group called the Denver Group that's run by a man and a woman. I hear from these people. They are PUMAs, which means party unity, my behind, and they are very angry, and the ones who I hear from are voting for John McCain, or they're writing in Hillary Clinton's name. They feel, as they say, disrespected by the Clintons, and I don't think it had to happen. I think it's a mistake.
Jim Wall, let me ask you a historic question, because again, most people don't know you. As I said, you were a very close friend of President Jimmy Carter. He was challenged for the nomination, for renomination, by Ted Kennedy. Your reaction, if you will, to what happens, because one of the most famous Democratic conventions in recent years was when Ted Kennedy absolutely turned his back on Jimmy Carter in the New York convention. So you know what happens when a primary doesn't come together properly. It leads to, as it did with Jimmy Carter, the defeat in November. Tell us what has to happen at that convention.
All right, bear in mind that Harold Ickes was the man in 1980 who orchestrated the Ted Kennedy attempt to change the results of that convention. He orchestrated it. The same Harold Ickes who is currently, at least wasn't until the last 3 months, my guess is still, orchestrating the Clintons' operations at this convention, because that's the way he operates. Ickes is a fighter on the convention floor. In New York in 1980, I was chairman of the Illinois delegation, and Ickes shows up himself. He didn't just send minions. Shows up himself to persuade some of our Carter delegates to vote for a rules change that would have given people the right to change the vote from what they had agreed to do when they ran for delegate. He lost that rules fight, but it left a bitter feeling among Carter people. And Teddy Kennedy, on, as you said, on the podium, acted like an adolescent who had been mistreated. He turned away. What is party unity if it doesn't mean the runner-up shows some respect for the winner? Now, runner-ups often are disappointed, but they don't disrespect the winner the way Ted Kennedy did in 1980 and the way in which Hillary has been behaving recently. Now, how she behaves this week, we will soon see. But she could also hurt her career if she comes off looking like a poor loser.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, the burden is on Hillary. I mean, one of the fascinating things, and maybe Carol's the expert, but somehow the Clintons are always able to deflect the attention to the other side of the equation. Barack Obama has prevailed.
He won it.
He won. He actually won. She actually lost.
Fair and square.
It's her job.
She was shocked to lose. She knows that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But it's her job to get on board.
So why in Palm Beach on Friday, as she gave a speech supposedly in favor of Barack Obama, did she keep referring to him as her opponent? And Bill Clinton asked, is Barack ready to be president? Cited the Constitution. Yes, he's more than 35 years old, but nobody's really ready to be president. Well, you always said Hillary was ready to be president on day one.
Craig, historically, you've looked at these conventions all the time. This is a pivotal moment, especially when you have the type of media coverage that this convention is going to have. They're going to watch every raised eyebrow of any member of the Clinton hierarchy.
Well, If I were Barack Obama, I'd be very worried about entering Hillary's name into nomination. In the old days, it would have been the opening door for some kind of insurgent, take over that convention. There's I don't know how many superdelegates there are there, but they must have been pretty worried to see Barack's big lead shrink and shrink and shrink down to this moment. And who knows who's been working those, if Ickes is doing that. Nobody's won yet, really,
Is there a way, I'm going to ask this to everybody, is there a way that she could wrest this nomination from him?
Yeah, so she'd get more votes. It depends on, I read something on Drudge that something like half of the Democratic members of the House of Representatives were voting for Hillary, and there may be more superdelegates who
And Ed Rendell is the mayor of Philadelphia.
Who knows what would happen?
Hillary's problem was the salvation for Joe Biden, and it's Vladimir Putin. Okay, I mean, sorry, Hillary's hope is the same as Joe Biden's ticket onto this ticket. It's Vladimir Putin. It's it is the interruption into this campaign of a little actual history. And people see what's going on, and they're looking at Barack Obama, and, maybe he was on a well-earned vacation, whatever. He didn't come off well in that exchange with McCain. And then the polls come out with one poll, the Reuters MSNBC or whichever one it is, the Reuters CBS, comes out with McCain 5 points ahead.
Zogby.
The Zogby Reuters poll comes out with McCain 5 points ahead. That is the worst thing that could have happened to Barack Obama.
The NBC Wall Street Journal poll, however, is out, and this is what it shows for the presidential election at this moment. Obama, 45%. McCain, 42. Undecided, 13.
That's an even. That's dead even.
Within the margin of which I always come back to. Anyone that's listened to this show for more than 3 weeks has heard me said that campaigns, when conventions are over, it's 45-45, and who wins the election it's about 10% of the population. They're the ones you got to get to. Let's get to them right now. Let's go to Susie, listening to us in New Brumfels, Texas, on KLBJ. You're on the air.
Hi. I'd like to say that I was, kind of happy when McCain won the nomination. Well, he's is presumptive. Being a Democrat, though, I was, I'm rooting for the Democrats, but I thought, McCain's enough of a maverick and a moderate that, maybe if he won, it would be okay. Well, then they started the attack ads against Obama, and I started learning more about McCain's background, and I thought, there's no way. This man is very much like Bush. He's to the right of Bush when it comes to the military, and I'm scared to death of the man. So I think that when people say that Obama hasn't pulled ahead like they would have thought or been able to make a separation, I think that that's because of a lot of the negative advertising, which we all know works very well. That advertising isn't just happening in commercials during the day. It's happening 24/7 on Fox News and 24/7 on AM radio. I'm unfortunately, my antenna doesn't work, so all I get is AM radio, so I listen a lot. And by golly, it goes on all the time. If Obama had that kind of propaganda going for him, the man would already be in the White House.
Let's let Chris Roebling respond.
Well, I think that you're right, talk radio, and you're right that talk radio is overwhelmingly conservative, but it is not clearly for McCain. I mean, Rush Limbaugh was conditioning his support for McCain this week on the very kind of move you were talking about, whether or not he might choose a pro-choice running mate, let alone a female pro-choice running mate, a female pro-choice running mate who's not even in politics, like the Carly Fiorina. So I think Rush has got a lot of issues out there, and conservative talk radio is not univocally for John McCain. On the other hand, you've got a Media Research Center report out this week that showed the real strong support for Barack Obama coming from the national media. I mean, it's overwhelming. He's had like 85-90% of the stories have been favorable, 10% not.
That's not the percentage I saw today.
We've got to move on. 1-800-723-8289. I'm Bruce Dumont. Back shortly from Chicago.
For free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to score.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit score.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration.
From Sioux Falls, South Dakota, to Birmingham, Alabama, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. I mentioned that one of our guests this evening is R. Craig Sauter. He is a historian of political conventions, and it was 100 years ago that the Democrats went to Denver for the very first time. It was the first time that there had ever been a convention What west of the Mississippi River or out west?
It was probably the fourth of the two parties that was west of the Mississippi. William Jennings Bryan, who was the nominee then, had moved the convention to Kansas City in 1900, then Denver in 1908, and then the Democrats finally hit the West Coast in 1920 with James Cox and FDR as vice president.
What in your view, as a political historian, what is unique about selecting Denver this year, and give it some historical context? What happened 100 years ago in Denver?
Well, there's some remarkable parallels with the political situation. 100 years ago, just as we are now, we had economic turmoil. It was the Panic of 1907, which set off a number of bank closings across the United States. There were tens of thousands of working people who stood in bread lines. They said that thousands of children had to drop out of school just to go to work. In fact, high schools in several cities actually shut down because the kids weren't there. prepared to work. So we have economic turmoil. That's a similarity. And we have an unpopular war now. They had an unpopular war going then. They were in the middle of trying to suppress the Philippine insurrection, which was left over from the Spanish-American War. So both those conditions prevailed.
Based on your examination of political conventions, if you have a convention in a particular city, what is the record of that state voting for the party that chose to have the convention there? In other words, obviously the Democrats this year think they can make Colorado a Democratic state and represent sort of a new moderate thinking Western.
I really don't have the statistics on that, but in 1908. Colorado, which in 1904 had gone Republican, did go Democratic in 1908, but it was the only state in the West that did go Democrat that particular year. There's other really fascinating parallels in 1908. The person who received the nomination that year made his reputation based upon one single convention speech, as with Barack. It was the first convention at which any women attended. There were five female delegates, even though the 19th Amendment and women voting in a presidential election was still a decade off. One was from Wyoming, two from Colorado, and two from Utah. And it was the first Democratic convention at which there were any black delegates. There were two black delegates at that convention. So it's symbolic that we have a woman and a black.
If people want to read more about this, they can go to your website, which is presidentialconventions.com.
Right. There's a button there for the Denver Convention, a free history on the Denver Convention, a button there for a free history on the Minneapolis 1892 Convention.
Right. And again, the website is presidentialconventions.com.
Yes.
And again, it's all free.
Right.
Let's go back and take a call. Whoops. Do we have calls here? We have suddenly lost all of our calls. I don't know what the problem is, but we'll double-check it. Carol, as you look at the Biden choice, and again, you sort of dropped a little bombshell at the beginning of the broadcast this evening, do you think that the selection of Biden, what impact do you think that is going to have on the McCain campaign? Do you think that McCain will be changing or adjusting his position?
Well, you know, there was some talk that McCain was going to make an early announcement, and I thought, well, no, he won't. And of course, he wanted to see who Obama selected. I just think that McCain is going to decide that he needs Mitt Romney, and I think that Mitt Romney will be able to debate Joe Biden. You know, Joe Biden will be an effective debater in the one vice presidential debate, and that's really the biggest impact that the vice presidents have, although Joe Biden is also going to be very good at attacking John McCain. John McCain and Biden are friends.
Wednesday night, though. Wednesday night is when Biden is going to speak. That's the night that Bill Clinton is going to speak.
Right.
So Bill Clinton is likely to upstage Joe Biden on Wednesday night.
Oh, I don't think so. I think Joe Biden is going to be massively popular. I think he couldn't have a better first name. I think he is, in many ways, he is a regular Joe. He's one of the poorest members of the U.S. Senate. And, of course, John McCain is one of the richest. And one of Biden's best lines was, you know, you sit down at the kitchen table and decide how you're going to pay the bill. And most of us know we have one kitchen table. We don't have seven or eight kitchen tables. But McCain and Biden are friends, and it's going to be interesting to see how that works out.
You brought up the subject that I want to spend some time talking about. Not knowing how many houses you have, isn't that about the worst possible thing McCain could have said in response to that question?
Well, I'm sure we could think of worse things. It didn't help.
Like when he said he doesn't know much about the economy.
But isn't that an issue that the average person can relate to?
I don't think it's honestly, I think that the issues that matter to people in this campaign are so much more serious and so much more pressing and immediate. And McCain is so much clearer on these and has such a demonstrable record on these. Whereas with Barack, you're going to get fuzzy answers and you're not really going to know what he's going to do.
I'm talking about image now. I'm talking about the visceral thing that moved people to vote yes or no.
John Kerry had houses all over. Teddy Kennedy had houses. houses all over. There are a lot of rich people who are in politics.
They didn't win.
I don't think they didn't win because they had houses. I think you're going to see.
But they would have known how many. It wasn't just that he didn't know how many houses he had. It was sort of the way he answered it.
I wish he had said.
Like
he was probably uncertain about how many houses his wife
had. I wish he had said. I wish he had said. I don't have any. They all belong to my wife.
Right, and they have a prenup.
And I was smart enough to marry rich.
And, you know, and they came right out with that ad saying that Obama lives in a mansion and that he was helped to buy it by a convicted felon. Tony Ruskell, that was a very effective ad. And I think it's Steve Schmidt who is running McCain's campaign. And since he's come on board in negativity, McCain's
we got to break. Mark Helpern, by the way, said today that he thought that the Tony Ruskell ad was the low point of the week because it opens Pandora's box because Obama is now going to get flooded with
that was the, I think it was a little different.
Well, we're going to get your reaction to that in just a moment. 1-800-723-8029. We got to go, but we'll be back for another full hour on radio. I'm Bruce Dumont. When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415 for a one-time professional fee. American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415.
For free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to score.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit score.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration.
It's time to stop what you're doing and go red for women.
Go red.
Start loving your heart today. Visit goredforwomen.org.
Go red.
And take the Go Red Heart Checkup. Get to know your own heart.
Go red.
The American Heart Association invites you to help stop heart disease.
Go red.
To Go Red for Women and give your heart the love it deserves.
My name is Teresa. I was a good mother. Then I tried meth and quickly became addicted. I abandoned my little girl to chase my next high. 8 months later, my daughter begged me to come home. Her plea made me enter drug treatment. My recovery wasn't easy, but I've been clean for 4 years now.
Meth is a powerful drug that affects everyone. If you know someone who's using, get involved. Treatment is available and it works. For more information, visit methresources.gov or call 800-662-HELP. Sponsored by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont. We continue with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway, offering national commentary opportunities tonight to our Democrat, Jim Wall, our Republican, Chris Roebling, author Carol Felsenthal of the book Clinton in Exile, and historian R. Craig Sauter, who is one of the country's leading experts on political conventions. 1-800-723-8289 is the telephone number. I was referencing as we went off for the first hour of the broadcast tonight, something that Mark Halperin said this morning on George Stephanopoulos' show, in which he basically said that because the Obama campaign went after John McCain on the issue of how many houses he had, that led the McCain campaign to come back hard on the issue of where Barack Obama lives, how he bought his house, and brought up all of the Tony Resco issues. And he was making the point that, the Obama campaign basically is not going to be able to say, hey, you know, don't fight dirty, because he was basically saying that they started this tit for tat as it relates to the current spots that are running
Absolutely.
On the air.
Absolutely.
Was that the way you heard it?
That is exactly how I heard it. I think they were going to come anyway. I thought the Resco stuff is going to come in anyway at some point. I think that Obama also got a pass on introducing race into the campaign, both in the primary on numerous occasions, and then more recently about 2 weeks ago in whatever speech it was that he was talking about, people would also point out that he was not the same color as everybody else on the dollar bill. So Obama has, despite his protestations of being the advent of a new politic, okay, he has resorted to a lot of pretty regrettable and disappointing tactics.
From your perspective, you see, you're purely seeing this from your side of the table, and I just don't agree with any of that. Let me say this about Mark Halperin. I was very disappointed to hear him make that comment, because he said very emphatically, and I watched it carefully, that the use of the attacks on the houses, 878 or however many houses he's got, opened the door for Obama to use, for McCain to use something against Obama, as if they needed the door to be open. That's silly. Mark Halperin said this is the lowest moment in the campaign for Obama. He's dead wrong about that. It's not the lowest point for Obama. I would say it's the worst point so far for McCain. First of all, it does make him look old. There's no question about that.
No question.
You may not
it.
Like it, but it's true. He does. I don't remember. That doesn't look very good.
But here's my question to you. By the way, I agree with that. I think, I want to be clear, I thought McCain looked horrible in that response.
Right.
That is an issue that, in my view, that hits to that 10%. They will remember that. All of the late-night comics are going to be coming back to that over and over again. It will be indelibly etched in the minds of that magic 10%. But my question to you is, when you hold yourself up as that you're new politics, you're above all this, you're not going to engage in the usual way of Washington, does this smack of the type of political commercial that, frankly, you get a little bit trapped on if you get stuck on your own petard?
Well, you
on
see,
this
the
one.
Argument that goes on is, if he does not respond to these attacks, if Obama does not respond, he is painted as weak, as unable to get into the ring with opposition.
No, but it was based on the ridicule of how many houses he had. Mm-hmm. It was basically saying he's so wealthy. It was not only his spot that he was out of touch, is that he's got seven houses.
Yeah.
I mean, it was personal,
we're going
not policy
negative
related.
So early. We haven't even had the convention. Usually mid-October is when you start going heavy negative. It's probably going to be all 90% all negative. And with Axelrod as his choice to strategist, we shouldn't be too surprised.
Don't forget,
about
we've them. Got a Roe v. Karl Rove's.
Right. So, okay. I mean, they're both well armed.
They come out of that background. No.
But Karl Rove isn't.
He's not doing it.
He's not waging. Let's forget him. Karl Rove is not involved in this campaign.
Some of the people with McCain do come from the Karl Rove.
Right.
Camp.
No. The campaign. It's worse. The McCain campaign is being run by Halliburton.
What's wrong with Halliburton?
It was a contract,
kidding.
Right?
I'm kidding. I'm just kidding.
Maybe nothing. Let's go back to calls. Let's go to Jim in South Elgin. On WLS, you're on the air coast to coast.
Good evening. It seems to me that Biden is a lot similar in politics to Obama, so I don't think it really adds much to the ticket, except maybe an example of just entrenched liberal politics. One example would be their effort to not explore new energy, and yet they always try to pander to the union voter. But how many union votes, or how many and lost because of energy.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, they're out there. I mean, there is no Bill Clinton, and I'm sitting next to an expert on Bill Clinton, so it's not for me to say much about Bill Clinton. But Bill Clinton took principles on substantive issues, I think, and laid them on the side and promoted the principles of accommodation and cooperation and trying to find a place where people could agree. That is not Barack Obama. Barack Obama is not interested in finding agreement. His bipartisan activities in the state Senate, in the U.S. Senate, wherever, are close to zilch. Okay, you want serious bipartisan activity, you go to a John McCain. That's the guy who does that on whatever the name, whatever the range of issue is.
Or Barack, Hillary Clinton.
Or Hillary Clinton. But Barack Obama, Barack Obama is, in that sense, he has plighted his troth to the left wing of the Democratic Party. He's won the nomination. That's where he's going to be. And I think Joe Biden is, by that standard, maybe a little more moderate than Barack Obama, but neither of them can triangulate like a Bill Clinton.
Yeah, but he's moved to the right. Obama's moved to the right, much to the distress of many of his supporters, and I hear from some of these people. But also, with all of the hoopla and the attention paid to the vice presidential pick, it was like 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Who's he going to pick? Who's McCain going to pick? But especially interested in who Obama's going to pick. And then when you see the polls, it shows that the vast, vast majority of people don't care.
Couldn't care
less.
They
say that what will make no difference in how they cast their vote.
But where it does make a difference, coming back to this magic 10%, it makes a difference in the Electoral College. Because whether or not by picking someone, it helps you carry a state.
Yeah, and I think that Obama did that.
Okay,
I think
here's my question to you. I'm going to ask a couple of questions now. I'm going to switch gears and ask a couple of Republican-related questions, and I want to get everybody's response to it. By picking Joe Biden and by calling him the scrappy guy from Scranton, they clearly want to make a case that from an Electoral College point, they expect him to carry Pennsylvania.
Right.
Does this raise, lower, or have no impact on whether or not McCain, who is a maverick, might do something and like picking a pro-choice running mate like Tom Ridge, the former governor of Pennsylvania? I want to get my Republican response and then the
others. Well, my quick response is I think it tends to breathe additional life into the possibility of Tom Ridge as a running mate.
All right, I want to get your reaction. Jim Wall, just on this issue.
Absolutely, Ridge will not be chosen because pro-choice would be the worst thing that he could do, the worst thing he could do. We've already won Pennsylvania with Joe in charge. He will have to pick Mitt Romney to take Michigan. That's the only thing he's got left to do. That's what it forces him to do,
Michigan. All right, I'm going to get reaction from the others after I make this statement. My point is that if he were to pick a pro-choice running mate, Tom Ridge, that story would dominate the Republican convention. Is that the message that would keep Hillary's supporters from really getting excited about Barack Obama? Back shortly.
You've heard the horror stories about meth. It's a powerful, dangerous, and highly addictive drug that's having a serious impact on our communities and horrible effects on families across the country. But there is reason for hope. Treatment for meth addiction is available, and it works. All it takes is someone to care. If you know someone using meth, get involved and help them get on the path to recovery. For more information, visit methresources.gov or call 800-662-HELP. Sponsored by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
It's time to stop what you're doing and go red for women.
Go red.
Start loving your heart today. Visit goredforwomen.org.
Go red.
And take the Go Red Heart Checkup. Get to know your own heart.
Go red.
The American Heart Association invites you to help stop heart disease.
Go red.
To go red for women and give your heart the love it deserves.
From St. Paul, Minnesota to Littleton, Colorado, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. I want to get reaction from you, Craig, about the point that I made before the break. If McCain, by the way, McCain will make his announcement on Friday of this coming week, 72nd birthday. He's going to make it in Dayton, Ohio. I want to find out whether that has any significance. But my point is that if he were to pick a pro-choice running mate, someone like Tom Ridge, I'm going to be specific. If he were to pick Tom Ridge, it would increase his likelihood of carrying the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. I think everybody would agree with that. He would certainly give stature to the ticket. He looks like he's a commanding person when he walks into the room. My question is, because the news media would be dominating, I mean, the whole week would be all these conservatives saying how upset they are with McCain, thus reinforcing McCain the maverick. Does that become an olive branch to some of the independents that may be worrying about McCain? And most importantly, what does it do to that substantial number of Clinton supporters, many of them women, who may recognize that as a profile in political courage?
Those are all clearly pluses for McCain, but it's going to put him in a situation where he's going to have to fight a battle on two fronts. He's just finally consolidated his base, his conservative base, with the performance he gave last week at the
Saddleback
Church. So I think that he'll probably not make that choice. I think that if I were him, I would go for the governor of Alaska, a woman, Palin, I believe her name is, who might attract those Hillary voters just as easily.
Your reaction as the ranking woman on the table?
Well, I like Palin too, but I think, and I also think that Carly Fiorina is an interesting woman, but she'll never, and Carly Fiorina is running.
Tell everybody who she is.
She is the former chief of Hewlett-Packard, and she is a McCain surrogate, and she is running around the country and meeting with disaffected Hillary supporters and bringing them into the McCain camp. Last week, she was in Scranton, Pennsylvania, the city we've mentioned most tonight, and guess who showed up at a meeting she had with disaffected Hillary people? Hillary's brother, Tony Rodham, the one who was married to Barbara Boxer's daughter before they got divorced. I think that Hillary's people don't care if the running mate is pro-choice or not. They are so angry. I got an email from one just before I left to come over here who I had written about on the Huffington Post. Her name is Simone Dubois. She is the one who shot the videotape of Hillary at a fundraiser outside near Palo Alto, California, where Hillary seemed to be, since a couple weeks ago, she seemed to be sending the message to her people to develop a strategy at the convention to put her name in nomination. She kept talking about catharsis. This woman said Obama is, and in her words, burnt toast. No matter who McCain picks, they're going with McCain.
Is this woman you're describing pro-choice?
Certainly. Yes,
in
she's
your
certainly
view.
Pro-choice.
In your view, then, I want to get your reaction to the Tom Ridge suggestion. And then the reaction, the other side of that, because I obviously have made a case for that, obviously not strong enough, but the other piece of that, which is what I said on this program, you know, the day or the 2 days after McCain wrapped it up, and that is the strongest running mate for him is Mitt Romney.
Right. I think that, as Craig was saying, McCain has finally gotten into some kind of equipoise with the base of the Republican Party, where he should have been all along, but he wasn't. Now it appears as though he is. I think if he does go for a pro-choice running mate, that will anger and it'll create uncertainty about how the base is going to take that and who will turn out, et cetera. I think the safer and more substantial and probably successful play is to go after Mitt Romney and to really put a flag into Michigan, where I think Obama is not doing well right now, in part because of the whole backwash from the Democratic primary.
Does Biden's presence on the Democratic ticket, does it diminish the likelihood of Tim Pawlenty?
I think so. I think that Tim Pawlenty, I think that we're not going to see a senator That's for sure. McCain will not take a sitting senator.
Well, he's
because we've already got three of them out there. And so we know that Pawlenty is a governor. Pawlenty is a governor. Yeah. Rob Portman is a former USTR. I think he's at OMB
and from Ohio.
Bush. He's got and the Bush guy. He's got a Bush imprimatur on.
Yeah, and so, he's Ohio.
And but again, Romney can also give you something else. Lots of money. Let's move to calls. Let's go to Johnny, listening to us in El Paso, Texas on KTSM. Nice to have you with us.
Good afternoon. Very interesting discussion there.
Thank you.
You know, I really think that I'm going to get my point across real quick, but I really think it's childish to see adults, I'm talking about the Hillary supporters, not looking at the big picture. And I heard one of you guys say something about her lack of international experience and so forth would not be of help. But having said that, did anyone ever think that if Biden was that important, bring Hillary in? If he wants to win, he should have brought Hillary in and give Biden a job as like the Secretary of State or something like that.
Yeah. I think Biden would have made an excellent Secretary of State, and he could have even announced it before. Just like I think he was on the verge of announcing that John Edwards was going to be his Attorney General. He had to obviously backtrack on that one. But I think that Biden was born to be Secretary of State. I think he would have been an excellent choice.
It would have been a home run because he would have had Hillary. All the Hillary supporters would have been happy. And they would have just waltzed right onto the White House in November. But now he's still got to fight because of
does it, Johnny? Then this is the question I asked to Jim Wall. Does it reflect a weakness on the part of Barack Obama that he isn't comfortable enough to pick the person who ran the strongest race against him and got almost 50% of the vote?
I don't know if it was or not, but I cannot, for the life of me, figure out why he made that move. I really can't because, you're talking about, you know, I think going back in the history, I don't, maybe someone on the panel can enlighten us, but I thought back during when the Founding Fathers put things together, who came in second automatically became vice president. Of course, I know that's different nowadays.
Well, I also think that, by the way, that's another issue that if McCain does pick, I mean, certainly the McCain people thus far, they're trying to pour salt in this wound of Hillary Clinton supporters. That's clearly their mission. They're going to be doing that all next week. Part of that salt in that wound is picking Romney. And then the media will say, see, he picked his number two as number two, and Obama did not.
Wouldn't it be easy to make a charge of weakness against Obama had he chosen Clinton? It would have shown that he didn't have the guts to stand up to the Clinton machine
That's an argument, too.
Oh, I think that's a good argument.
That's a very strong argument, too.
Also, the argument that Hillary was the most vetted person does not hold any water because, in fact, Bill Clinton's activities, I write about it in my book, both personal and professional since he left the White House, are a Pandora's box. And nobody has looked at it, including the people who have donated to his library and to his foundation. It would have been one constant scandal. I honestly don't think he could have picked Hillary.
We are experiencing the skullduggery that Carol spoke about in the first hour, that there's always some Clinton skullduggery. If Hillary had a first-class ticket, as we used to say, on the Obama train, 99% of this Hillary, these burning embers for Hillary would have been tamped out. They would have been washed out. The campfire would be out like a good Girl Scout. She would have gotten it out before she left the campground. But she hasn't, and that's for a reason.
Yeah. To lose.
Phil in Chicago on WLS and Coast to Coast. You're on the air.
Yeah. My name's Phil.
Yeah.
I think Obama made a boo-boo when it came to he should have picked Hillary Clinton for the simple fact he was weak on national security and he was also weak on the economy. McCain's going to get 20% of Hillary's voters no matter what happens. He's going to at least get 20%. Which is 3.6 million voters. Now, and she would have stopped that. And as far as McCain, he should pick Romney because he doesn't have to worry about Hillary's voters. He's going to get at the minimum 20%. So he can't, you know, he can't screw up on his own base. So I would take the 20% of Hillary voters, just say I'm going to get 20% of Hillary's voters, and I'll be happy with my base then and go from there.
My question to you, Chris Roebling, I want to get reaction. Stay on the line. By picking Mitt Romney, what does that do to the evangelical vote, many of whom believe that Mormonism is a cult, and they will not vote for Romney? How large is that number?
I don't think it's significant with Romney in a vice presidential role. I agree with you. There's an irreducible number out there that won't do it. However, in this interregnum between the primary and the general, Romney has been building bridges, and he's been trying to do his own missionary work, no pun intended.
And Huckabee's been out there trying to undercut him.
Go to Bert, listening to this in Medina, North Dakota, on XM Radio. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, good evening. How you doing?
Okay, what can we do for you?
Well, I want to say a couple things right off the bat. All right, I'm a firm believer that God created this planet and everything in it and on it. Two, I'm an independent. Nobody really entices me right now, nobody since Ron Reagan.
Okay.
My point is the energy policy. The last 25 years ago, we lost our independence. We are a nation of indentured servants to foreign oil. Now, the last seven presidents have said that we need to get off foreign oil. One had a chance, he blew it. That was Bill Clinton back in 95.
Right, and on that note, we're going to say farewell because we're moving to a commercial break. 1-800-723-8029. Taking America's political pulse from coast to coast and border to border on America's great radio stations and on XM Radio, POTUS 130. That's 24 hours a day, 24/7 politics, POTUS, XM Radio. I'm Bruce Dumont. Thanks for joining us tonight from Chicago. When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415. For a one-time professional fee, American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415. from Scarsdale, New York to Redding, California, with a stop in Lincoln, Nebraska. You're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Nice to have you with us tonight. Chris Roebling is here. He is our Republican. He is a crisis communications expert, former head of the Republican Party in the county of Cook, and also managed a Republican mayoral campaign for his friend Don Hyder many years ago. Also joining us this evening is Jim Wall. Jim Wall is a close associate of former President Jimmy Carter. He managed his campaign in the state of Illinois in 1976. And when Jimmy Carter was president of the United States, he slept in your guest room in your house in Elmhurst, Illinois.
He slept in my bed.
He slept in your bed.
I had, hope you weren't there. We had to move upstairs.
Did Mary Eleanor?
You moved up. I think I've heard that story. Yeah.
That's
but
true.
That's neat. The president of the United States coming to your house. And again, you've been to a convention since 1972. And again, originally a sports writer from Monroe, Georgia. Also joining us this evening is Carol Felsenthal, one of the country's leading freelance writers. And her new book is called Clinton in Exile, A President Out of the White House. And your book about Katherine Graham, the publisher of the Washington Post, is being made into a made-for-TV movie, right?
It's by HBO.
Mazel tov. When is it coming out?
Congratulations.
Well, they're going to start filming it soon.
I think
Laura Linney.
Oh, great.
The director who directed the John Adams miniseries on HBO, taken from the David McCullough book, is the director of the Kay Graham Project.
And
so
also, you blog for Huffington Post.
Right.
And also the Chicago Daily Observer.
Yes.
Which is a new website.
And before I jumped up from my office chair to come over here, they posted a piece that I wrote on Joe Biden, which I'd been thinking about for a while, and I was 99% sure that he was going to win. But instead of writing it early, instead of going to the beach with my kids yesterday with my son, I was sitting at my desk writing.
And if people, people who joined the program late, if they want to hear what you have to say or read what you have to say, what is the web address?
For the Chicago Daily Observer?
Yep.
Google Chicago Daily Observer and you'll find it. I'm not sure what it is. But my website is www.carolfelsenthal.com
okay, so
and it has links
there.
On it.
Okay.
Yes.
Also this evening is R. Craig Sauters here. He is a historian of political conventions. He's written a number of books on the subject, including Inside the Wigwam, which was about the history of conventions as it relates to Chicago. But again, if you go to his website, which is www.presidentialconventions.com, you can read free of charge background on the conventions in Denver and in Minneapolis. We talked briefly about Denver. Tell us about Minneapolis, which is where the Republicans will go on Labor Day night.
Minneapolis, 1892. It was a convention that was supposed to renominate Benjamin Harrison. And usually renomination conventions are pretty straightforward. But in this particular convention, there was an insurgency going on. Benjamin Harrison's Secretary of State, James G. Blaine, resigned from his office 3 days before the convention, and out of New York State, Senator Thomas Platt and Matthew Quay out of Philadelphia were trying to engineer his nomination instead of Harrison. So it was quite an exciting convention.
It's one of the many things you get free of charge on the internet. Again, it is presidentialconventions.com. R. Craig Sauter also does a lot of political work as well as a political advisor and media consultant. He's working on the Democratic campaign for the governor of Indiana. There's a race on going on there, and you're throwing your 2 cents into that race.
My brother and I write Sauter Communications.
Very good. Well, we thank you very much for joining us. And by the way, our website is beyondthebeltway.com, and our new email address, in case you've missed the last couple of weeks, it's btb@museum.tv. BTB, as in Beyond the Beltway, at museum.tv. Earlier in the broadcast, we were talking about and singing the praises of Joe Biden and the fact that he is going to be billed as the scrappy kid from Scranton, Pennsylvania. If you are a regular listener to this show, you know there's a gentleman who listens frequently. He's a religious listener to this program and a prodigious writer of very articulate letters. He is Bill in Scranton, Pennsylvania.
Hi,
Bill.
Bruce.
You know what? The first thing that I thought about when I heard about Joe Biden I thought about Bill from Scranton, Pennsylvania.
Yes, sir. Thank you. And honestly, I am so filled with glee. I can't tell you. I was telling your screener, my generation is, I'm 65, are the closest supporters of Elvis Presley. And it's that way with Joe Biden, with everybody in Scranton. We never met the guy, but we love him. It's just like with Elvis. But can I mention something about
the
Hillary?
You never met, I'm
going
to let you about Hillary, but I want to ask you a question. Joe Biden is 65 years old. He'll be 66 in November. When was the last time he was there?
Not long ago, I'll be honest with you, because I don't attend those political gatherings and things like that. I'm a little bit antisocial. But I know he was in Scranton not that long ago, and he was on a local radio station when he was a candidate, WIOK here in Scranton, when he was a candidate, that one of the talk show hosts had him on as a guest speaker that just answered questions and things like that. I can tell you that. But would you let me address this thing on Hillary?
Sure.
Because I think everybody's got it wrong. And if I can, first of all, it's the independence that he needs. I consider myself an independent. I'm real strong on Obama. If he would have chosen Hillary, I would have voted for Ralph Nader, and I made that pledge. And I think he would have lost as many as he would have gained. He might have picked up some of those sore losers that cling to the Clinton embers, but he would have lost, I think, a lion's share of independents who said, this guy ain't what he appears to be. By this choice, he has demonstrated he picks the best and the brightest. And in my humble opinion, this is the perfect ticket. At first, somebody on TV today said, it looks like Biden should be, the premier candidate and Obama should be the secondary. And at first you'd say yes, and then you say no. It's like it has to be juxtaposed because each one complements the other. Each one fills in. It just looks like a perfect chemical equation to me, an algebraic equation. It really does. I am thrilled to death because I really, really think the world of Obama. And speaking of this black thing, I just want to mention just every black person out there knows to succeed, they have to be the best, not just good, just mediocre. And this is what Obama strikes me as a black man who knows the ropes, how to get ahead in America. When you're black, you have to be the best, and he is the best. And he's demonstrated that by his choice with Joe Biden. And I'm tickled pink, honest to goodness. I hope you can read my writing, Bruce. Can you?
Wait, I can't. You're a little hard. You're a lot easier to hear than reading.
Most people say I can't read it.
No, but it's kind of hard to read, but I do read it. Jim Wall's got a comment.
First of all, your caller is a brilliant man.
great
insight, and you should have had him on the show instead of me tonight, because he's a great defender of both our candidates, both Obama and Joe Biden. I just want to make the point before we get away, and that is that John Kennedy made a decision very similar to this.
Yes, he did.
When he picked Lyndon Johnson for his vice president.
But they hated each other.
Of course they did.
But I think Biden and Obama.
That wasn't the issue. The issue was he needed Lyndon Johnson
to win Texas,
but also to maintain leadership of the U.S. Senate, because he knew John Kennedy was a very low-level senator. And with very little experience, foreign policy experience especially, but Lyndon Johnson was a strong character, and it reflected on John Kennedy positively that he was willing to pick such a strong figure.
Bill, we're going to move on. Thanks very much for your call. We appreciate it. Let's head to Muncie, Indiana. Dave is listening to us on the Internet tonight. Go ahead from Muncie.
I was wondering, I think it was Mr. Dumont who mentioned that picking Mitt Romney would give him access to Mitt Romney's money.
Not necessarily to Mitt Romney's money, but Romney has the ability to raise a lot of money.
Oh, I guess I misunderstood what you meant. The question I was going to ask was with regard to Mitt Romney's money, and I suppose to McCain's wife, since he's pledged to take matching funds, there's, as I understand it, a limit on how much he can raise.
Right.
Does personal money, is that still limited by the cap from the matching funds, or is that outside of that?
I think personal money at the presidential level, excuse me, level does get limited if you take the matching funds.
Okay.
There's the matching fund limitation is sort of an omnibus. Where money ends up going still, notwithstanding McCain-Feingold, is into state parties and other party committees.
He could contribute to swift boat committees, though, that they'll be creating.
That would be, and that would help.
Well, I'm sure they're coming up very soon.
And I think also, by the way, the thing about Romney is that in some of these swing states out west, or at least perceived to be swing states out west, like Nevada and Colorado and even New Mexico, there's a goodly number of Mormons that reside
in
Utah
those. Utah would be in play.
Utah, they would pretty much have Utah, but yeah, I'm saying
Colorado's a toss-up as we speak.
Again, there's the political power of Mormonism is not exclusively related to Utah. There's other. Again, the big thing, which I think is not necessarily news, is that if they can put in play, Michigan, and we learned this when we did the show from WOD Radio in Grand Rapids a couple of weeks ago. I mean, clearly the addition of Mitt Romney on that ticket would make Michigan a very competitive state.
Yeah.
Might give the edge to Romney. And again, the father ran for president from there. And also was the governor there. In fact, if you're walking out of the state capitol in Lansing, the George Romney office building is right there.
It was his
first
father,
thing you see.
It was his father who was brainwashed, if I'm not mistaken.
His father said he was brainwashed, and you know what? He was ahead of the curve.
Well, I'm just telling you what we remember about him.
That's
the image that you carry with you.
1-800-723-8289. I'm Bruce Dumont from Chicago.
For free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to score.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit score.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration.
They're stirring chili in Cincinnati and munching on fudge in Mackinac Island, listening to Beyond the Beltway this evening, 1-800-723-8289. Let's go to Houston, Texas, where Carlos is listening to us. We have a little stuck line here. Carlos, are you there? We have a problem. Carlos, are you there?
Yes, sir. Can
we
you hear
a little
me?
We had a little phone problem, but that's I've managed to correct it.
Well, Bruce, you know I'm a big fan of yours. You also know I'm a big conservative down here.
Yes,
and I'm going to say this. Obama or whoever picked Biden was a stroke of genius, and here's why. It's going to force McCain's hand. I think one of your guests said it right. It's going to force McCain's hand to pick Tom Ridge, which is going to upset the conservative vote. But Obama remembered one thing, or whoever picked Biden. They remembered that it was conservatives who would disenfranchise voting for Hillary. So the majority of these Hillary Republicans are not going to, it's not going to matter if they don't vote for Obama, okay? And he knows he can win with Biden. It's going to force McCain's
you
hand.
You think these are the Rush Limbaugh turncoats that went into the primary?
Exactly. Come on. My God. Everybody was going for Obama because of the so-called change. Hillary, nobody wanted her. Maybe 9 million Democrats wanted her. But the majority of those Democrats that voted for Hillary are going to fall in line with Obama. And the majority of those conservatives or Rush Limbaugh Hillary voters are going to fall in line with the McCain, unless McCain does something stupid,
he's going to
pick Tom Ridge.
All right, you think he's going to pick Tom Ridge. Let's go to Chris Roebling.
Well, I think that Ridge is going to get another look because of Biden and the question of Pennsylvania. But I don't think that Ridge is going to be the nominee. I think that I don't think the party is ready for John McCain and a pro-choice nominee. I don't think that that's good for the party. I don't think it's good for the conservative wing of the party. I think that McCain will arrive at the same. I could be wrong. I think that ultimately Biden is going to force McCain into Romney, focusing on Michigan.
That would be a smarter move on behalf of McCain.
It would be a smarter move.
There is no way that he has any merit coming up with a pro-choice vice president. People will have to know the decision on the Supreme Court will not be made by the vice president.
Unless he ends, up being the president.
Tom Ridge is also already preparing himself in hopes it'll be selected by saying the vice president doesn't have his own views. That's
right.
What he said.
So,
he falls in line with the president. George H.W. Bush was pro-choice, and he fell in line with Reagan, who was anti-choice.
Yeah, yeah. You just the one thing that I think, insofar as the 10% of the people, the number of people in this country, whether they are Republicans, whether they are Democrats, whether they are Catholic, Protestant, whatever, the number of people who are tired of having the issue of abortion debated every 4 years as if it is the most important issue facing the future of this country, the number of people who are fed up with that is in the tens of millions of people. And you know what? And any candidate who basically stands up and says, you know what, this is not going to be the defining issue in this campaign, I think they would get a lot of votes.
Well, McCain made the point at Saddleback that that was absolutely crucial for his election.
To that audience, it was.
Yeah, but other people heard the whole thing.
Let's go to New York. Charles is listening to us on XM Radio. This is a very astute caller. I recognize the name, Charles. Go ahead.
Thank you. I'm calling in reaction to a phone call from somebody who was saying that Biden basically was the same ideology, the same everything as Obama, and that the decision was not to balance. I couldn't disagree more. This guy, Biden, has basically been on the hawkish side of the foreign policy debate in the Democratic Party for 10, 15, 20 years. He was on the hawkish side of Kosovo, hawkish side of expanding NATO. He began as a hawk on Iraq before reality kind of drummed into his head that was a mistake. What's interesting is that his position on NATO, expansion of NATO, including the Balkans, runs diametrically opposite to the opinion of one of Obama's other chief foreign policy advisors, Sam Nunn, who consistently opposed it. The bottom line is, I think this may have been a mistake, because I think if Obama wins, he set himself up for a situation where Biden will either operate like a Cheney, Cheney, however you want to pronounce it, and will make Obama look weak, or Obama, whose instincts with regards to Iran and so on are not as hawkish, I think, as Biden's, will wind up saying no to Biden all the time, and Biden will wind up being a frustrated fifth wheel. I think it may have been a mistake. I think he should have gone with a change message, not a reassurance message, because I think it just makes Obama look like he's nervous about how people view him.
Charles, your assessment is great. We're going to try to take another call. I do appreciate it. Susan in Chicago on WLS and Coast to Coast. You're on the air.
Hi. Barack Obama, people are saying, has had no executive experience. How many people know that he was actually chairman of the board of the Annenberg Challenge in Chicago?
And, yeah, very important point. We were talking about it in a break, and I'm glad you raised it. And we're going to learn a lot more about it in the next 3 to 5 weeks.
Give us 2 minutes on it right now.
Annenberg was giving out the Annenberg
Walter
Foundation.
Walter Annenberg of Pennsylvania.
Triangle Publishing was giving out a lot of money for a lot of different potential educational reform activities. One big tranche of funds came to the Chicago area. Barack Obama led it. And Bill Ayers was one of the chief action officers in it. But I'm sorry, Susan, you go ahead.
Well, you know what? The phones, music is playing, so we can't. We're out of time. But you know what?
Okay.
I predict that there will be more discussion of this in the future. By the way, I wanted to get this in. The undecided voter, we talked about the 13% of the undecided voter in the NBC Wall Street Journal. Here's who they are. Primarily women, age 35 to 49, ideology, moderate, religion, Catholic, party identification, independent. That's the prototype of the people that are going to determine who the next president of the United States is. On that note, our thanks to Jim Wall, our Democrat. Our Republican is going to be Chris Roebling. Chris will be in here hosting this broadcast next week when I will be in Minneapolis, St. Paul. Our Craig Sauter has been with us. Again, presidentialconventions.com is the website. And the ever-popular Carol Felsenthal is here, author of the book, Clinton in Exile. This program is a Genevieve production. Lauren Goldman, farewell to you. You've done a terrific job there. He's going off to college. I'm Bruce Dumont. See you next week from Chicago. When was the last time someone offered you a second chance to save thousands of dollars? If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, American Tax Relief is offering you a second chance to eliminate up to 85% of your delinquent taxes. Thousands of honest, hardworking Americans have turned to American Tax Relief for the help they need. Look, your tax problem isn't going to go away. In fact, it's only going to get worse unless you get help. Call 1-800-449-1415. For a one-time professional fee, American Tax Relief can get you the second chance you've never had before to save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Get the second chance you deserve and save up to 85% on your delinquent taxes. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation to see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-449-1415. That's 1-800-449-1415.
For free confidential small business advice, call SCORE at 800-634-0245 or log on to SCORE.org. Every year, thousands of people get help from SCORE when starting or growing their companies, and you can be one of them.
My SCORE counselor taught me how to create a business plan and make sound financial projections so that I could get a small business loan. I don't think I could have approached my bank so confidently without SCORE's help.
SCORE mentors can help with business planning, cash flow management, and market analysis.
My SCORE mentor walked me through the steps of identifying a market, researching the competition, pricing my product, and so much more.
Call SCORE at 800-634-0245 to meet with experts who have been in your shoes.
All I really needed was a sounding board for my ideas, someone I could trust. My SCORE counselor talked me through my business questions and gave me the courage I needed to expand.
If you're a small business owner or thinking about starting a company, call SCORE today, 800-634-0245, or visit SCORE.org for free confidential advice. SCORE is a nonprofit association and a resource partner with the U.S. Small Business Administration. We'll be right back.